Hello, I'm Joey Haskins, and welcome back to You've Never Seen, in which I showcase a movie you've probably never seen before. At the beginning of the film La Belle et la Bête, directed by Jean Cocteau, he states to the audience to endure in a childlike simplicity when watching this film. You shouldn't need to question why a hideous beast and a young maiden would fall in love. Endure in this childlike world, and above all things, don't think about it! I paraphrase when I say that, of course, and you'll see why in a bit. La Belle et la Bête, or Beauty and the Beast, as it is known in English, is a 1946 French film written and directed by Jean Cocteau. It stars Josette Day and Jean Marais as the title roles of the film. The film is recognized as a classic of French cinema, and Cocteau didn't have a whole lot to work with. In the wake of World War II, the production of the film used old cameras and lenses that broke and jammed, it was hard to find costumes that weren't torn or old, but despite all of these setbacks, the film was still made. The film, as you know, tells the story of how a young maiden named Belle trades her life for her father's imprisonment in an enchanted castle run by a beast. Despite a story that has been adapted many times before, Cocteau is able to keep Beauty and the Beast fresh by taking it in new directions. Cocteau used a lot of his favorite art and stories in the creation of the film. In particular, the look of the film was inspired by Gustave Doré and his work on the illustrations for the French version of Don Quixote. You can especially see it in the look of the beast's castle and garden. The works of Johann Vermeer also inspired the farmhouse scenes. There's also the inclusion of the tale of Orpheus. That being, the tale of the bard Orpheus going to the underworld to retrieve the soul of his beloved Eurydice. The Beast's castle serving as the underworld in Cocteau's case. The way that he shoots it and the way it's designed, the Beast's castle almost seems like a completely different world from our own. And the enchanted castle is almost like its own separate character. Food appearing out of nowhere, smoking statues, moving hands holding candelabra. These elements only make it apparent that there's an otherworldly feeling to the Beast's castle. And as I watch it, I keep asking myself how they're able to do all of these effects in the film that seem so advanced. But that's not the only thing that Cocteau would create that was notable. In most adaptations of the story, it was mainly just a love between Belle and the Beast, eventually falling in love and breaking the curse. Kind of like The Princess and the Frog. But Cocteau added a little more nuance to the idea by introducing a human suitor for Belle. Avenant starts out as a seemingly nice guy, but very quickly you see that he's boorish, brainless, and overall a jerk. It makes the Beast look a lot better by comparison by placing his trust in Belle by giving her the key to his riches. And to put it even more on the nose, Jean Marais plays both Avenant and the Beast. He plays both differently, of course, and Marais' Beast especially is portrayed with a loneliness that does make you feel bad for him, and shows how he's misunderstood. It's further conveyed through the makeup. It's very superb, and it definitely brings out Marais' piercing blue eyes. Cocteau portrays a brilliant new adaptation of the longtime tale that has been adapted again and again and will be adapted for years to come. Cocteau's legacy had been cemented with this film. It's by far his most well-known, and no matter what, several prominent critics and historians consider it one of the greatest films ever made. Robert Osborne of Turner Classic Movies had cited it as one of his favorite films. Roger Ebert put it in his Great Movies list. And of course, it is in the Criterion Collection. Specifically, it was the sixth film to enter the collection. And it's so good, I actually own a copy myself. It's one of the most influential, beautiful, and aesthetically pleasing films ever, and if you haven't seen it, take a watch. Maybe you'll feel inspired by it, but remember that the film has a lot of weird elements, but just remember to indulge in that childlike simplicity just like Cocteau did when he made it. Just don't think about it. You may notice that I'm done talking about the film, but there's still plenty of video to go. That's because for the 25th episode of You've Never Seen, we're not just talking about La Belle et la Bête. We're talking about another film just like it. While Cocteau was making his film in the 1940s, animation pioneer Walt Disney had always wanted to do an adaptation of Beauty and the Beast, but but it never came about because, according to the company, it was too much of a challenge, and after seeing Cocteau's version, felt he couldn't live up to it. Fast forward a bit through the 70s and 80s, Disney's success after the death of its pioneer waned as people weren't going to see all the films they were producing, like Pete's Dragon and Condor Man. I kid, of course. The films made during that time have all garnered cult status, but didn't become as popular as anything else Disney had made before. On a risk, the company would release a film in theaters based on Hans Christian Andersen's fairy tale, The Little Mermaid. The film was in development for years and had to be rewritten a lot, but it didn't matter. Why? Because it made a lot of money. At least enough to show Disney that there's still a market in the fairy tale business. And thus, work began on their next big feature. And just like Little Mermaid, after going through several rewrites and moving production to New York due to the dying Howard Ashman working on the film, soon enough, Beauty and the Beast, directed by Kirk Trousdale and Gary Weiss, was released in late 1991. And while it was a tale that everyone knew, just like Cocteau, it did stuff differently. In the medium of animation, the film is able to portray the Beast's more animalistic tendencies, making him more of a creature than Cocteau's, who was more regal and refined. And the Beast is my favorite part of the animated film, not only in how he's voiced, which is done spectacularly by Robbie Benson, but also in the way that he's animated. His face is allowed to be more expressive, and in certain moments we are able to see the humanity in him. There are all these scenes in the movie where it's just close-ups on the Beast's face, and we can see that he can go from angry and vengeful, to awkward and contemplative, to sad and lonely, and it's all done brilliantly. But that's not the only thing of note. The animated film was also inspired by Cocteau's film. It had taken Avenant from Cocteau's film and his representation as a human suitor for Belle, and created, of course, Gaston, the villain of the movie and one of the most entertaining parts. Not to mention it put more emphasis on the Enchanted Castle by having them sing and dance. And it doesn't matter if that's par for the course in Disney's case, they were able to tell the story that had been told so many times and made it their own thing. And besides, you all know the words to like four songs in this film just off the top of your head. One of them is probably even stuck in your head right now. I don't even need to bother telling you the story. You know what it's about. You know everything that happens in this film because it's very simplistic in that regard. Like Cocteau, the film asks you to turn off your brain and just enjoy the magic you see on the screen. And furthermore, in the commentary for the film, directors Gary Trousdale and Kirk Weiss mentioned that they got tired of explaining how everything in the castle was enchanted and just told people to enjoy the magic. In other words, it's a fairy tale. Don't think about it. Sometimes the most simple stories can leave an impact on people, especially one that's widely known as this one. And yes, I'm sure plenty of people have seen this film, more so than Cocteau's version, but hey, if you haven't seen this film, you really need to. That's my justification for putting it on the show. Beauty and the Beast is an achievement not only in animation and storytelling, but in film in general. It's easy to forget that although this film is a product of the Disney pipeline, it was immensely praised the world over. Before its release, an unfinished cut of the film was shown at the New York Film Festival, one of the most prestigious festivals in the US. And when I say unfinished, I mean that certain scenes weren't fully animated yet, so they left pencil-in sketches as replacements for them. And after the film was screened, it was given a 10-minute standing ovation by the festival. Later that year, it was also screened out of competition at the Cannes Film Festival, the most elite film festival ever. And the praise didn't stop there. Beauty and the Beast would go on to be the first animated film to win the Golden Globe for Best Musical and Comedy, arguably the second most prestigious award given at the ceremony. But it didn't stop there, as it would become the first of only three animated films to be nominated for Best Picture at the Oscars, the most sought-after award in the industry. And it's of my humble opinion that it probably would have taken the award for Best Picture home that year if not for Silence of the Lambs. Its presence had been cemented into Disney history and film history, and is still regarded as one of the company's best films to date. It had been turned into a musical and added more songs to it, and won several awards for that achievement as well, further creating an even bigger legacy for the film. Not to mention its importance for the company, cementing Disney as a still viable studio after taking the risk of The Little Mermaid. Yes, The Little Mermaid did spark the fire of the Disney Renaissance, as it was called, but Beauty and the Beast stoked the flame it had created to even bigger heights. The film is so good, so beloved, it makes almost no sense why anybody would try to capture the gold it had acquired by doing the film again. Right? 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 Disney would re-release the film every now and again because it did really well. They even did both IMAX and 3D releases separately. But that's not what I want to talk about. There's still some video left, and I want to talk about the 2-hour and 10-minute elephant in the room. By the time the early 2000s had come, Disney's sudden rise to fame once again had waned with several box office failures and many, 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 many direct-to-DVD sequels on their already existing library, including two for Beauty and the Beast. At the same time, the company DreamWorks had emerged as an actual competitor to Disney with their film, Shrek. Shrek is more important to Disney than it is to DreamWorks, though. Why? Well, because a lot of the humor in Shrek focused on the sort of metatextual commentary, poking fun at the Disney company and its tropes and marketability, basically saying, why watch this film that has a handsome protagonist and a predictable ending? Come see our film. We're the cool kids. We're better than they are. This metatextual commentary would allow the audiences to look over the Disney films they grew up with, and that did include Beauty and the Beast. They were questioning why the servants were turned into silverware. They did nothing wrong. How could Belle's village forget that there was a castle with a prince inside? What happened to Belle's mother? And what's my answer to this? Well, like Trousdale and Weiss had put it before, and like Cocteau before them, it's a fairy tale. Don't think about it. But the complaints didn't relent, so much so that it had started to echo into Disney itself, and this comes along with a rapidly changing society. Their movies were not only animated films about romance and falling in love, but they were also making fun of the Disney brand and its shortcomings as a company who relies on the success of films that are over 50 years old. As such, in 2010, they were to release Alice in Wonderland, a live-action film directed by Tim Burton, which was a remake/sequel to the original animated film? I don't know, that one's kind of confusing. It didn't matter anyway. Why? Because it made a lot of money. And now Disney has the groundbreaking idea of remaking all of their old films. They started out with Maleficent, which told the story of Sleeping Beauty from the villain's perspective, then a remake of Cinderella, and a remake of Jungle Book. And say what you want about these films, at least they did something different to make it distinguishable from their originals. And also, if they are going to remake stuff now, it's best to do the old stuff first, since those three films were made at a time where things were different, so a modern perspective could work. But in 2014, along with the announcements of these three remakes, Disney announced they were remaking Beauty and the Beast. At the same time all of this was going on, acclaimed director Guillermo del Toro was also making a Beauty and the Beast film for Warner Brothers, and Belle in his film would be played by fresh off the heels of one of the most popular film franchises in the world, Emma Watson. However, in 2014, it was announced that del Toro would be stepping away from the project to work on his next film, Crimson Peak. Soon after, with no real direction, the project was scrapped, but the internet had still wanted Watson to play Belle. So, in early 2015, she was cast as Belle in Disney's remake of Beauty and the Beast. Shortly thereafter, the rest of the cast was announced, and the film went into production and was released. Beauty and the Beast is a 2017 film directed by Bill Condon, and it's an adaptation of the original tale, and a remake of the 1991 film made by Disney. And in case you couldn't tell, I really don't like this film. There are a lot of reasons for that, so I guess that for this film, it's not you've never seen, it's now you shouldn't see. My personal opinion on remakes is that you need to have grounds to remake it. The remakes for Sleeping Beauty, Cinderella, Jungle Book, those all have some ground to make it, but Beauty and the Beast has very little. And the reason for that is all those accolades I mentioned earlier. The awards, the recognition, the significance in regards to the Disney Renaissance. There's no way that Disney actually thought they could live up to or even replicate the success that the original had created, showing that the only reason they made it was for the money. And in order to justify it being remade, it added on a bunch of stuff that didn't need to be added. And that's the main problem of the film. All the little stuff they added to further delve deep into the details of the world, but in the process, making everything worse. Probably chief among them is significantly changing what the Beast does in the film. In the 1991 film, the Beast is the one who gives a room to Belle, showing that he has compassion, even though he has a lot of problems. But in the new version, it's Lumiere and Cogsworth that show her to a fancier room and let her know of the West Wing. It's a small detail, but it changes our perspective of the Beast to still be a raging jerk. Or how about changing Gaston from the beloved hunter of the village to a war veteran who's bloodthirsty and likes to kill a lot to kind of explain why he goes crazy at the end? And half the time, the village is kind of on his side, but also not. It's so confusing. I mean, what's wrong with him just being intolerant and angry that someone who looks uglier than he does can capture the heart of the person he wants to marry? It's a lot more universal in its theming that way. It also doesn't help that, as stated before, the town doesn't automatically love him. Because, during the Gaston song, LeFou has to pay the people to sing about him instead of them doing it because he's so great. There are so many other things they added as well. A subplot where Belle doesn't know what happened to her mother that I think is supposed to drive a wedge between her and her father, but never does. The added stakes of having all the servants in the castle turn into antiques when the rose dies, which ruins Belle's and Beast's relationship even more because it implies that Belle is trying to love the Beast just so she can save them and not to just love him. And on that note, one thing that really annoys me is the library scene. In the 1991 film, Belle saved the Beast's life, so he wants to do something nice for her. So he shows her the library, filled with thousands of books for her to read. It's a sweet gesture and further shows the humanity of the Beast and his trust in Belle. As I mentioned before, there's a similar scene in Cocteau's version, where the Beast gives Belle the only key to a garden filled with all his treasures. It's supposed to be a moment where he shows his vulnerability and opens up to her, and trusts her to show it. In the live-action remake, the Beast shows the library to Belle to show off. Yeah, they're talking about books, and the Beast is annoyed by Belle's taste, so he shows her his huge library, to show off his collection, like how everybody has this many books in their home. The Beast's selfishness is now because of his deadbeat father, not because he's a royal and snobbish anyway. He was nice before his evil father morphed him to be exactly like him. And also, the village is important now for some reason, because we needed to see what their reaction was when the castle they had seemingly forgotten about reappeared out of nowhere. And we need to know that Mrs. Potts had a husband and Cogsworth had a wife. All of these things are bad and I don't like any of them. And I'm not even talking about everything. I haven't even mentioned the stupid magic book. I could probably teach a class all the intricacies of how bad this film is and why you shouldn't see it. But the thing that gets my blood boiling so much is the ignorance of color in this film. Not to say that it isn't colorful, it very much is. But saying they aren't using color right in this film. Specifically, in the Belle sequence. In the 1991 film, they establish that Belle is different from everyone through a song that tells the audience how she's weird in a very catchy tune. It's one thing to tell us this, but it's another to show it. They also establish this in Cocteau's version as well, and although it's not in color, they show it by having Belle's evil stepsisters dress regally and fancy while Belle dresses in simple robes and rags. But they also show this in Disney's version as well, because Belle is the only character in all the village who wears blue. Everyone else wears dirtier colors like green, brown, red, but only Belle wears blue. In the 2017 film, however, in the same sequence with the same song, a bunch of characters are wearing blue. Blue, 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 blue. Every other character is wearing blue. Thus, this shows us that Belle isn't as different from everyone else, and thus we only know it because the film tells us it. And of course, the color's connection to the Beast. When we first meet him in the 1991 film, he wears red, just like Gaston does. Then throughout the film, his wardrobe slowly turns into more bluer colors, just like Belle's. Not only telling us how he's changed, but also showing us. It's something that I've always taken an issue with ever since I saw the 2017 film, and I come from this as someone who grew up on the Disney classic. It was one of only four Disney animation films I grew up on, as I was mainly a Pixar guy, so it really means a lot to me. And despite the shortcomings of the 2017 film, it made a boatload of money, which in turn gave Disney the green light to make all of their other films. But only the ones that people know. Not Atlantis or Treasure Planet. No, no, no. We got to remake Aladdin and The Lion King and Mulan. And they aren't stopping anytime soon. With their most recent release of their remake of The Little Mermaid, they're also going to redo Bambi, Hercules, The Hunchback of Notre Dame, Lilo and Stitch, The Black Cauldron, Snow White, The Aristocats, and most baffling of them all, Moana. Not 10 years after the original one was released. And it doesn't show any signs of stopping soon. Which leaves the question, what will Disney remake when they have remade everything? And honestly, I'm just tired of it. I'm tired of all the remakes. I'd rather just watch the originals. Heck, the existence of all these remakes is making me expand my viewership of older Disney films. I watched Cinderella for the first time 3 weeks ago, so I guess that's a positive for me. But I recommend just watching the original 1991 film and not the new remake. And also, check out La Belle et la Bête. It's really good. Whichever one you watch doesn't matter. The story of Beauty and the Beast is one of the oldest stories in history, so it will continue to be told again, and 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 again. All of the films can be bought or rented on iTunes and Amazon. La Belle et la Bête is available to stream on Max, and both of Disney's Beauty and the Beast films are available to stream on Disney+. And you can check out all three films at your local library. With Weston Media Center, I'm Joey Haskins, and thank you for joining us on our first 25 episodes. Here's to many more.